as a young player, let's say you came into our environment and Richie McCaw was our captain, you know, mercurial player. He was the first player onto the field every single time for training. Now, what does that say about work ethic without him saying anything? It says everything. So if you're Sam Kane joining the team as he did when Richie was at his peak of his powers, you're like, wow, I've got a bit of work to do here, you know? I want to be that.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. Brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hi there.
And we're delighted to be joined by Darren Shunt.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome, Darren. Really pleased to have you with us on The Curious Advantage podcast.
Thank you.
So to kick us off, Darren, you've been the All Blacks manager since 2004. How did you get into the world of rugby and to become the All Blacks manager?
Yeah, well, interestingly, probably rugby's not really my passion.
That's not how I expected you to start.
Well, I'd, you know, kick it off with a bang. And, you know, I was not a rugby player of note. Often positions like this are filled by former players or people of that sort of note. But my background was sort of in the adventure tourism world initially, and I ended up in a management role there that involved sort of marketing and sales. So my first entry into rugby was in a sort of commercial role. I just happened to be working in a professional club, the Crusaders, at that time. It had a couple of coaches that just saw my interactions with people and with players and said, how would you like to be the manager? That was sort of my first opportunity in rugby to manage the Crusaders. They had a very, very good period of success when I was there. And I guess sort of 5 years into that, the All Black job popped up. And I guess I was curious, you know.
Great start.
Could I be that person? And I think my own personal journey, I'd felt I'd never really reached my potential. So in sport, you know, at a very young age, I represented my country in hockey. And within a year, I stopped playing. I just couldn't cope with the pressure of trying to be what I wanted to be and not being able to be that person. Similarly, probably with my university studies, you know, got through my degree and really wanted to push on, but just didn't, you know, and kind of regretted that later. Had an opportunity to do a master's, didn't. So when this came up, I thought, well, this is a pinnacle, you know, can I really make a success of this? And I was curious enough to even ring the panel and ask them, hey, look, you know, when the job was advertised, there was quite a bit of, you know, media coverage of it, and certain names were recommended, and Darren Shan was certainly not one of them. So I asked the panel, what are you looking for? You know, what do you want? And I got a sense of comfort from them that, you know, my professional skill set was really what they were after rather than reputation or the fact that I played for this team. So, put my name forward and gave it my best shot, and I was, you know, hugely honoured and grateful to have got the role in the end. And to have done 20 years is really beyond anything I imagined at the time. I thought it might be a, you know, a 4-year cycle or something like that. So, it's been a great ride. I've certainly a different person to the person that started, and I've learned a whole bunch of things.
Must be an amazing journey, Darren, like 20 years with the All Blacks, like a, you know, without doubt one of the biggest brands in sport and most successful as well. A question, you must have seen lots of ups and downs working with some of these top players over the years. How do you keep players who are at the top of their game curious and keep developing throughout it all, no matter, you know, as they're preparing, whether they're winning, whether indeed they're losing? How do you keep them curious?
Well, I think the environment that we've built over the time here has demanded that. So we've built a really quite an internal challenging environment where at any given week, it's demanded that you help each other get better. So there's a real cooperation amongst everyone for that to happen. There's a very strong connection to our success. And so we're never satisfied. There's always another Everest to climb. And I guess we see ourselves as pioneers. We see ourselves as people that find new challenges. How do we redefine our legacy? We don't see our legacy of 150 odd years of success, you know, 75% success rate. We don't see that as a burden. We see that as a challenge. We see that as something to add to. And when you're here, you've got the opportunity to add to it. You know, you can write history. And that becomes really exciting. And I think the curiosity is, how do we keep making those challenges relevant, you know, for each other and for the team, to keep sort of that sort of drive to be the most successful ever. I guess from a visionary standpoint too, we've not been afraid to state what we'd like others to say about us. You know, like we've historically talked about the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. We would never say that about ourselves, but that's a pretty demanding question to ask yourself each day. Am I GOAT in the role that I play here? And how do I become GOAT? And what are the things I need to do today to be GOAT? And so I think that's both on an individual level, some people within the group have really inspired that, but I think collectively there's a culture that sort of demands that when you're here.
I wanted to read a quote to you about what people have said about you, Darren, and forgive me for embarrassing you if I do, but it really leads on from what you're talking about, making history and putting that down. But here's what they say about you. He is so well organized dealing with all the moving parts in the All Blacks. He holds people to account and has a way of challenging the leadership group, which is really valuable. That's a wonderful thing to have written about you. What is it about your leadership style that you think inspires people in this way?
Yeah, it's fascinating, eh? Because one of the wise people in my staff once said that, you know, in leadership, everything has changed and nothing has changed. And I thought about that a lot. And I looked at what traditional leaders were, and I just couldn't see myself in that role. And so I thought, well, how do I lead the best with the way that I am, you know? And I guess here, because you live in that fishbowl, everyone comments on your performance, and the expectation and the scrutiny is very obvious and very public. So you have to learn quickly who you are and how you are. You can't really have blind spots because they get identified. And if you're a fraud here, you fail. So I had to sort of realize who I was, a sense of who my real self was. And I realized as a leader, I could lead from the back, not the front. I could quietly influence. I was quite happy if I saw something to say something. I wasn't prepared. If we have a standard in the team, we have a set of standards, if you like, which is called the All Blacks way. And there's a phrase that goes around our environment. You know, if you walk past the standard, then how can you expect others to, you know, deal with that standard too, you know? So the standard you walk past, is the standard you accept. And so I've never been one to walk past standards. And I think as far as the leaders go, I've always tried to offer a different perspective. So our leadership group is mostly about on the field and performing, you know, on Saturday, which it should be because that's what our job is. But I'm quite happy to ask why and challenge and why do we do it this way? And I guess I look for a different lens than a lot of the people in our group. And so I'm always curious to find out why they think that way, why they see things in that particular way. So, and I think I do it with a sense of care, you know, and a sense of the team first, because that's the underlying ethos in this team is we over me. So that's kind of, I guess, characterized the way that I lead.
Yeah, can I pick up on two things? You said a number of times that you talk about the environment that you create or the externals, but you tell us a little bit more about what you know about creating the right environment. What is the right environment? And why the environment is important?
I think there's a couple of things for us around environment. One is there's got to be a safety. You know, it's like people have got to be able to come in here, be able to cope with all the pressure, but still be themselves. So live in a world where everyone's looking at you, but still feel you can be yourself. Because if you think about what we have to do each week, is we have to put a group of 15 players out in front of 80,000 people and millions of people on TV to perform. And they've got to be able to do that themselves. Got to be able to make great decisions under pressure and be totally self-reliant. And so we've got to build an environment where that can grow and that can flourish during the week, because we'll never be better than how we prepare. You know, we don't just turn up on Saturday by magic, we win. You know, like there's a stack load of work that goes in Monday to Friday to help that happen. So first, we've got to make people feel comfortable, be able to be the person they want to be. Secondly, we've got to really drive accountability. And so we've got a set of standards both on and off the field that we have to live to. And we've got a minimum and we've just got to keep people at that minimum. Obviously, we would love it to be elevated, but if we get everybody there at that level, we know that we're at a good space, you know. people can still be themselves, absolutely. And we have a real multicultural mix in our group, which we recognise and celebrate. And so I think that really provides that safety net. But then again, we also have a demanding environment around getting the things right that really matter, come Saturday.
We're talking with Darren Shant. Darren has been the All Blacks manager since 2004. He has a Bachelor of Physical Education from Otago University, and he started his career as a marketing manager within tourism pioneers AJ Hackett-Bungie in Queenstown. In 2014, Darren was appointed as an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit in the Queen's Birthday Honours, and he's managed the All Blacks during Rugby World Cup wins, undefeated international seasons, Tri Nations Rugby Championship wins, 3 Grand Slams, World Rugby Team of the Year, and the Laureus Award for World Sports Team of the Year. He's currently transitioning out of the world of rugby, and he's working more and more with businesses where he's applying his experience and expertise to help businesses succeed. He's also working with us at Novartis as part of our Culture Leadership Advisory Board as well. So, Darren, maybe diving into some of the leadership lessons that you can take from rugby and apply into the business world, what do you see as some of the key skills needed to be an efficient leader?
Like, I think if I look at sport and apply that to business, there's a couple of terms that we use in sport. Like, it's a team, and so everyone has a jersey. Everyone has a number on that jersey, and that has strategic relevance because that in sport, that defines your role. And if you're number one, you've got a role. If you're number two, you've got a role. The captain doesn't necessarily wear number one. He might wear number eight, but that's his role. So when we have a young player come in, we pick them on talent, and it can be overwhelming, but all we're asking them to do is to put on that jersey and do that role and to trust that the other people beside them will fulfill their roles. So I always believe, and even with our staff, we all have a role, and there's always room to grow, and I think how we define ourselves and redefine ourselves becomes important. And one of the features of this environment has always been about, let's look at your current reality. You're the physio. Do you think you're world class? No. Okay. So what's your gap? Are you an 8 out of 10 physio, or you're a 10 out of 10? Well, I'm an 8. Okay. Well, there's quite a gap. Now, how are we going to what will world class look like to you? And then let's work backwards to your current reality, and let's put some steps in place to help you grow. That's been a real strong driver. Have to have a role, have it really clearly defined, because under pressure that matters, that people can fulfill that. And I guess you take away what I see in business a lot is it's very position defined and becomes very power defined then. And so we operate a flat structure in that sense, because we're just asking people to perform at a very high level, but still lead themselves. Lead yourself first. That's leadership. Leadership is more than just leading others. It's firstly leading yourself. And I think that's critical in our sport. I think the second thing is the whole notion of what in sport you use the notion of personal bests, and striving for personal best. And I think in business, again, that's another analogy that you can bring across and say, well, what does personal best look like for you? Again, similar to that notion of how do we grow a person? What's a personal best marker in this business this week that we need to strive for and use that? Like, our players are so competitive, every session are striving for personal bests, be that in the gym, be it on the training park, be that off field, in terms of how they meet people and engage with people. I mean, we took our whole team a week ago to a Māori marae, which had just been devastated by flooding. This community had gone, when the floods happened, they were the first community that went out and helped everybody. But now, 6 months on, no one's helping them. And, their marae is devastated, and that's their community gone, And so we went in there. I'll tell you, it was one of the most fulfilling experiences I've ever had. We all got on the bus afterwards after a morning on shovels and in gumboots and digging silt out of a meeting house, and seeing an 80-year-old man who had built this meeting house, which took him 50 years, tell us at the end that he'd just given us 10 years of life back, and he's going to go and rebuild it now and carve everything again because of, just that connection. So just that, I guess, that constant strive to be better both on and off the field. One of our greats, a man called Sir Brian Lahore, who was a great All Black captain in the late 60s. He was a selector for us for years, and he coined a saying when we first sort of changed the culture that better people make better All Blacks. Unfortunately, at the time, we had a couple of players in court for drunk and disorderly, and it didn't go down too well with the public, and they mocked us a bit for it. But I sincerely believe that is a real grounding statement for this group. And when I look back at success, I remember the better people. You know, I don't necessarily remember the triumphs and the trophies and the medals. I remember that person that started as a 20-year-old and where he ended up and where he is now. So I think those are some of the really great things that sport can bring to business.
I really like that, Darren. And also the way you describe how the players, the team, are role modelling their ethics, their leadership, the way they go about their lives, not just on the pitch, not just in the training, but also out in society with the people that know them, and they can make a difference there too. The other thing I sort of struck by was with the physio. You said, well, what type of physio are you? I'm an 8 out of 10 physio. In most lives, that's a pretty good score, 8 out of 10, isn't it? But you immediately went to, well, that's not world class, is it? We're about world class, and world class is probably more like 9 or 10 out of 10, which I think is an interesting thing to reflect on as well. How do people respond to that when you're pushing them each time and every day for, you know, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10?
I think the environment just demands it. Like, it becomes part of your DNA, you know? You become so attached to this team and its success. You see everyone around you doing the same thing. And so it's like you don't want to be left out. I even have to put mantras above my door, you know, every day to remind myself of what we're about, you know, because I've been here 20 years and I don't want to forget, you know? I don't want to forget the privilege of just being in this group. You know, interesting now in transitioning that we just see ourselves as custodians here, that we have our time here and it's not forever. You know, we're not entitled to this time. It's something that's been given to us and it'll finish, and I'm finishing, you know, and I'm like, well, I couldn't stand sitting back next year watching this team not succeed. You know, like, I want to pass the baton and I want whoever jumps into these shoes to do an even better job than I could even imagine, you know? And so that becomes a real driver for you day to day, just to constantly be better and take yourself to a level that you didn't really think you were capable of.
Yeah, and just to dive into that one more, which is the All Blacks are highly successful without doubt and have been for many, many, you know, years, but they don't always win as an English man. At least sometimes happy to say that. They don't always win. But how do you motivate and work with a team that, following a loss, you know, even if you've been preparing for some of the, you know, the highest level stuff, like the tournaments you've really worked your ass off for, and then they don't win. How do you deal with that as a team, as a unit?
Interestingly, the challenge is actually probably harder to keep winning than to deal with a loss, you know, because, you know, historically, you know, we don't lose too often. And there's a natural feeling when you lose that when you're put into that situation where there's a bit of adversity, people tend to work harder. You know, it's just it's a natural human and emotional reaction. And I think there's such a strong sense of responsibility in this group for this team that's actually kind of easy to deal with. You know, like, we have to park that. We have to pick up the lessons. We have to learn fast, you know, because that might happen on Saturday, and the following Saturday we've got to front up and do it again. And part of our way is we have to respond, and we have to respond quickly. Actually, sometimes what's harder is actually winning and keeping winning, because Mr. Complacency can very quickly creep into the house, and small parts of preparation can suffer. You know, high performance is about very small margins, you know, like 0.5% in one area can, you know, be a moment in a game that costs you a game. So when you're dealing with those real fine margins, as a management group, we find that a lot harder. We've been searching for the, you know, I guess our Nirvana or our Olympics is the World Cup, which comes every 4 years. We play 4 matches in the pool and we qualify hopefully for the playoffs. And then we go into a situation where if we lose a game, we go home. The rest of the years between World Cups, we don't have that situation where that match actually matters. And it's quite a different mindset and a different way of preparing. So, you know, we've really got to sort of change, you know, figure out how can we do back-to-back-to-back wins, you know, and keep the level high and keep performing. In 2019, actually, when you guys got run over us in the semi-final, I remember we really geared ourselves up emotionally to play the Irish because we'd had a bit of a rough run with them. And then we just didn't expect what we got from England the next week, you know, and we couldn't take the emotion of that really strong performance in the quarterfinal and take it into a semi-final, you know, straight away. And England had been sitting there with Eddie Jones, you know, looking at us for 2.5 years, figuring out how he's going to beat us. And they came with something that we didn't have that day. And we were, you know, 0.5% off or 1% off, and we got beaten. It's a tough, tight game. It's very, very small margins.
You mentioned mindset as you were talking there, Darren, and I know you've got a sort of performance triangle that looks at mindset and there's some other elements. Could you share sort of how you look at mindset in relation to some of the other factors that drive performance within the team?
Yeah, I guess that triangle is about performance. And if we've got a performance issue, then we use the triangle and say, well, is this a mindset issue we've got to resolve here? Or is it a skill set issue? Or is it a structure issue? If I give you an example, post-2007, we failed at the World Cup. We lost a quarterfinal to France, and we were raging hot favourites, number one in the world, and we lost. The referee was a young Englishman, actually. Name was Wayne Barnes. And not showing any unconscious bias here, but he was a young referee, and you know, perhaps he made a mistake or two. But at the end of the day, those are sort of things outside of your control. But I remember for about 2 years, we were blaming Wayne Barnes. You know, like we lived, you know, the above and below the line model of behavior. We were below the line. You know, it was blame. It was deny. It was make excuses. And it wasn't until a year or two later, we actually got above the line and said, how do we own this problem? You know, like how can we not have to worry so much about it? So we said, let's look at referees from a performance perspective around what's their mindset. So what sort of style of referee is Wayne Barnes? How does he like the game played? How does he see the game? What sort of mindset does he bring to the match? Then we looked at his skill set, which is very easy to do. You look at tendencies at how many penalties per game? How does he referee the scrum? What's his tendency at line out? What's the offside line like? Those sort of, and you very quickly build a picture with those two factors. That then allowed us to build a structure to deal with that. And so, for example, how do we communicate with him? What are the tendencies that we should do there? Who should communicate with him? There's some players that he doesn't like. They shouldn't talk to him because that'll upset him. And so you just frame this. I guess we were profiling the referees and trying to learn as much about them as we could to put as much of the ammunition that they bought on our side. And we got some great results from that. You know, our discipline improved. How we communicated with refs got better. I mean, in fact, I think on the back of that, Richie McCaw, you know, most people are saying he had the referees on their side, but really on the basis of a whole lot of work in a performance triangle sense to work, how could we get the best out of this particular area where we didn't have a lot of control, but how could we, you know, add to our arsenal with skills and elevate our performance in terms of how we got on with referees and how we understood how the game might go.
I really like that, Darren. It's, in the business world, I'd compare it to sort of understanding your customer, actually. You know, the better you understand the customer, the more you're going to resonate with them and deliver something they want. But it's a fascinating idea that not seeing the referee as the enemy. He's the guy basically there trying to facilitate a good game of rugby or a good game of sport, whatever it is. So why not work alongside him? I think that's quite a fascinating way of approaching it. How did that change some of the way some of the key players behave? You know, you always get big characters in rugby. How does some of the ones more out there cope with that strategy and that approach?
Well, I guess at the same time, what we were also learning was about how do we deal with pressure? What does the brain do when you're put under pressure? And that became a really important learning skill for us because we know pressure is really about where your attention is. So if your attention's on the decisions the referee is making in a moment, that could be a second that you're too late to be in a defensive line to make an important tackle when you're saying, come on, ref, you know, he's doing this. And you're diverted. You're off task. So doing that work alongside this was very important. And so our players learning that the game is really just a series of tasks that we've just got to keep completing and not get diverted by even a guy pulling my jersey. You know, that could be a second where I stop and want to have a swing in him or something like that. But again, that could cost the team because, you know, again, I've been diverted. Someone with a mouth that's too snappy, that could be a penalty. So it became, we could demonstrate, we could show it. And in the end, you know, it's pretty easy when teams just stack up points against you from penalties that aren't warranted. You know, they're not necessary, and it's from sort of reckless behaviour, you know, rather than ruthless behaviour. That there were some really strong learnings for us out of that.
I'm fascinated by your triangle model. I think it's very useful. The idea of let's have a look: is it mindset? Is it structure? Or is it skill set? And skill set for me says, okay, there are things I need to learn to do better, which you talk about a lot. Then mindset is, you know, where am I at personally? How am I coming to the situation? What what do I bring of myself to the situation and the way I'm focused on the situation to help me do better. And of course, structure is not taking for granted everything, but creating the best possible environment for your success. And we talk about in our book, The Curious Advantage, we learned a lot about context. And for me, one of the big ahas about learning context was not to bring models or frameworks that I may have learned in other situations into a new situation, to try and really, as you talked, you mentioned critical bias, to really try and put my biases aside and look at the context and say, this is new for me. I need to learn it. I need to pay attention. And one of the things that struck me also about when you were talking about your team and their mindsets and this group of people about being world-class is how competitive they are. These are hyper-competitive people always going after their personal bests. And the question for me is, what is the role of, if you're dealing with competition on that level and you've got this co-opetition that you talk about that's required in this situation, what is the role of a captain or a leader in this kind of highly competitive co-opetition type scenario?
Yeah, well, I think the leader's role, and look, one of the features of the All Blacks has been a shared leadership model. So it's not just about top-down driven approach or a menu-driven approach. It's very much been about shared, and that shared is between, you know, a few senior staff and a few senior players, and that's about aligning on purpose. It's aligning on standards. It's aligning on the way we play the game, you know, so that we work together to achieve it. It's the whole, in New Zealand, you know, the Māori people paddled wakas, you know, canoes, and I guess in simplicity we talk about having everyone on the waka paddling in the same direction. So I think our role as leaders and is one is that we've got to drive that type of behavior. We've got to encourage that type of behavior. We've got to set the standard that type of co-opetition, as we call it, you know, that marriage of cooperation and competition is actually really important, because that's what makes the team better. It also makes the individual better. And so what a beautiful marriage. You're getting growth in both personal level and a macro level in terms of a team. And so we've got to, first of all, we've got to demonstrate it. You know, we've got to live that. We've got to, our behaviors have to reflect that requirement. Our attitudes have to reflect that requirement. We can't have an out on that. So we've got to be the models, if you like. Stephen Sinnott talks about the diffusion effect, you know, where you get your, we've got to be the early enablers, you know, because we are the ones with the greatest influence. And as a young player, if you come into our environment, let's say you came into our environment and Richie McCaw was our captain, you know, mercurial player. He was the first player onto the field every single time for training. Now, what does that say about work ethic? Without him saying anything, it says everything, you know, I'm ready. Let's get out here. Let's do it. Are you guys ready? Because I am, you know, and I'm the leader of this team. So if you're a Sam Kane joining the team as he did when Richie was at his peak of his powers, wow, you're like, wow, I've got a bit of work to do here, you know. I want to be that, you know. So I think, yeah, how we are as leaders is hugely important, you know, how we act, how we behave, how we talk, the language we use, that's critical rather than the position we hold.
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag CuriousAdvantage and join the conversation.
Something that we look at within our research on curiosity, Darren, is around how we should look beyond the obvious and look to other fields for inspiration. And I know, actually, at the moment in London, you're working with the wider INEOS group around looking to other world-class sports teams, whether that's cycling, whether that's motor racing, Formula One, etc., to see what traits can be learned across those and be curious around how can learn from each other. Maybe could you share a little bit more around what you're doing there and that sort of curiosity to look beyond the immediately obvious within the sport to other disciplines to be able to see what we can borrow?
Yeah, well, I think, and it probably points to Garrick's point earlier around we all have perceptions of how we see things, and we probably also have in sport similar issues that we have to, performance issues we have to deal with, but it's hugely refreshing to put those issues in front of a eclectic mix of people from different sports and just listen, you know, and just see how they deal with it. Initially, when this group was set up, there was a number of sports involved, and myself and Ian Foster, our coach, got on a call with Sir Dave Brailsford, who was heading the group up. And we had an hour just chewing the fat about our environments, and Ian put up a couple of challenges that we were facing, and Dave gave his perspective. And you know, Dave's a 40-year veteran in high-performance cycling, and he's got a great insight. He's a high-performance geek. You know, he's great in that space. We chatted for an hour or so, and the call finished, and Ian rang me, said, can we do that next week? You know, I've got 6 pages of notes from that, you know, and it's like you go to a house, you're in a building with one window, and then suddenly you go to a building with like 20 windows, and suddenly all these other perspectives come, and your experience helps you see things and think, well, oh yeah, that's worth considering. How could I adapt that to here? That for me is the real beauty of it, that we, you know, we're all striving to get athletes to the best level they can to perform under pressure and high performance events. We're all about trying to make them very self-reliant, you know, so they're not dependent athletes, but they're athletes that are totally reliant. Take, for example, Formula One. So we talk about learning fast. So we have a week between matches. Okay. In Formula One, you have qualifying, and the next day you have some other race. You've got 24 hours to learn. So how do they? I said to ourselves, how do they learn so fast? You know, how can they turn around being the slowest on the track, the next day being the fastest? Like, there's got to be some sort of process that they go through. I'm sure there's a whole lot of engineering stuff that happens too, but how do they take that on board? So there's, again, just the notion that you talk around curiosity, just being in the room with others in sport, I find it's fascinating. If you've got an agenda that's all about, you know, getting better and being the best you can be.
I think that applies so much to the world of business as well, that I certainly see it from various sort of groups of CLOs and others that I belong to. And there's no one that has everything perfect, and everyone is good at different pieces. And I guess within sports, you're taking that to the absolute extreme of sort of the best in the world at any piece. But if you can then learn from the best in the world of, okay, we're not so good at that area there, what's the best in the world doing? It helps you up your game in so many places. So I think it absolutely applies into the business world as much as it does in the sporting world.
Makes me think about data as well, guys. You know how when you were talking about F1, Darren, you know, they use so much data, which is coming now flowing out of the car into their computer programs, but also sport, you know, whether it's football, whether it's hockey, or whether it's rugby. You guys are using more and more data these days. You have to put a ground, you have to put something, a stake in the ground if you want to measure something. You want to measure your personal best, or you have to keep all the records. I always remember a funny story by Peter Ustinov, where he was turned into the, being the worst cricketer at school, he was turned into the scorekeeper because he was so amusing that all the rival school scores would go offline, that he would have to help them fill in their books. And his side always won mysteriously, so they kept him in the scorekeeper for years. But the point I'm making is about the use of data and how much more data we have these days. I mean, the kind of equipment we've got which can be measuring things is just becoming more and more spectacular. And with AI, you know, we've got another spin on data. There's a huge role for data in kind of moving things forward. What do you think about data?
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. Data's, we've got more information than we know what to do with. Our matches filmed with 28 cameras. You know, we can look at every single skill and micro detail, frame by frame. Fantastic learning tools. But for me, it's always a continuum with data between the science and the art. And getting that balance, like we, you know, fascinatingly, when we talk to people like Formula One, where there's a very heavy emphasis on data, and they don't see a lot of data around our environment. It's not obvious. But I think one of the great lessons we learned was from Jim Collins in his book Great by Choice, where he talks about companies that operate in sort of chaos. He talks a lot about if you want to raise your performance bar, if you can deal with the many important, you'll raise it. But if you can deal with the critical few, you'll be at an even higher level. And that's what he found in those companies that were great. They could just deal with the critical few. And so, again, I go back to, what are we doing on a Saturday? We're putting out 15 players on the field. Now, we want them to be light, bright, and clear. All right? So if they're overwhelmed with data, they're not light, bright, and clear. And the game operates at such a speed that it has to be instinctive, you know? And so we have to, through the week, build that clarity. Like, we might be a little bit data heavy at the start of the week because we have to learn. We're also coming off another match, so physically we can't do a whole lot of things, but we can do a lot mentally to think about how we're going to play, what sort of mindset we're going to bring, what are the key strategic things we need to consider about our opposition, about the way we want to play. But come the middle of the week, we've then got to be able to, that's just got to become instinctive, you know. It's got to be tested at an intense level, you know, so that we can then bring an accurate level. We talk about CIA as our week sort of program: clarity first, then intensity, then accuracy. And that allows us to make the best use of the data, because the data is needed at the start to confirm what we need to know. Then we've got to commit it, and we've got to learn it at a pace that allows us to then do it later in the week and ultimately on Saturday, without really having, you know, unconsciously thinking about it, you know, just being able to just deliver and execute in the moment.
Yeah, and in business, the same, right? People are overwhelmed with data, overwhelmed with information and knowledge, almost to the point that paralysis of decision-making. But very much like what you said, if you focused on the one thing you have to do on Saturday afternoon, it really cuts through all of that and makes this much clearer for every individual. They know what they're dealing with. I'm quite into golf currently. Golf is also a world massively informed by statistics and yardage and swing meters and so on. But in the end, I think the best players are able to relax their body, focus on one thing and swing the club and hit the ball, right? Darren, you've done, you had an amazing 20 years with the All Blacks, and as we talked about earlier, you're transitioning on. Could you tell us a bit about what are your plans now moving forward?
Well, I guess the last few months have just been having a really good think about what I want to be. And I've kind of stopped and reflected a bit and done a bit of work with some people around that and tried to really, I guess, set a platform for what my future looks like in terms of what are my skill sets. If someone uses me, what can I bring? What can I deliver? What can they expect from me? And that's been a really grounding experience. I've been working with a linguist, actually, who's very good with words, and it's really shaped it and made it really sharp. And I guess my goal is to be working in peak performance, whatever that means, business or sport. I want to be, for reputation, I want to be someone that enables, you know, enable things to happen. I've got a whole lot of principles that are based around team and the power of many versus the power of one. Thinking a lot about how I could bring that sort of role into sport and to business, you know, how could I get, what I've learned is that, and a lot of, particularly in the sort of consultancy advisory space, you sort of bring one person in to solve all the problems. But I look at sport and it's multi-layered. It's all about getting the athlete better. And there's a whole lot of areas that matter. And all of those things working together collectively really make a difference in terms of an athlete's performance. And so, you know, I'd love to get a group, build our own team of experts that could work in that space and look right across an organization or right across a team about how could we take you from a mid-level performer and elevate you to be a peak performer? You know, what are your gaps? Where are you at right now? And where's the potential for this to go? Oftentimes that doesn't take a lot of money. It actually takes a little bit of commitment from people. It takes a bit of a mindset shift. It takes a lot of vulnerability. And I think if you can get people out of that position and power space and into a space of really letting others know who they are, you can transform things. You can really move very quickly when you get people in that space. And I want to explore sports that I'm passionate about as well, that I really love, and, you know, make a difference in those. And again, if I can find businesses that have similar values and are all about team, I'd love to help those sort of people as well. So that's where the thinking is now. And yeah, and then just be a fan and watch this team hopefully carry on.
We certainly wish you all the very best with this transition and with your ambitions, which I think are brilliant. I have no doubt there's so much to learn, because I'm finding fascinating this conversation. I'm curious about, what are you personally curious about at the moment?
I'm curious about what I can be. I'm actually really excited by the challenge of having this opportunity now with the experiences I've had to see what I can do and to, I guess, almost to retest myself. You know, there's a certain sense of comfort in this environment to some degree, even though high performance is actually quite uncomfortable at times, because you're dealing with a lot of public issues and you're constantly under scrutiny. But to sort of take, I guess, that pressure away and sort of redefine what I've learned and be able to apply that to different contexts is something that really excites me. And I'm really curious to be able to stop a little bit and read a little more and explore other concepts and think how I can apply those to the lessons I've learned and just, I guess, just widen my understanding of particularly leadership. You know, like I love the fact that we've challenged the paradigm of what traditional leadership's about, and that there's other ways for people that are maybe not so extroverted and overt to actually be great leaders, you know, and how we can bring those people into the light rather than leaving them in the dark. And I've always felt that early on, my potential was never recognized. And so I know there's people that hide in the shadows with that all the time. And so how can we bring them forward? Because they can have all the skill sets that organizations or teams need at times.
So we're coming towards the end of our time, Darren, but before we wrap up, any questions that you'd like to ask of us?
Well, I guess, you know, what have you heard today that you might take away and think, well, that's something that I'm quite curious about and maybe looking at it in a little bit of a greater depth. That's what I asked. We had people from Formula One, professional cycling, European football, and so on with us, and that's what I yesterday. I said, I want to ask you two questions. What have you seen today that you might take away and use immediately? But what do you know that you haven't seen in here that you'd like us to know? So that'd probably be the two things I'd ask you to reflect about.
I love that. Who wants to go on? Garrick, you kick us off.
Always want to go first. I'm fascinated by your triangle, actually. I think that's really, really useful for me, the idea of the mindset or the skill set or the structure. If you're doing any analysis of a situation that I may be involved in or that my team may be involved in, let's just haul out this triangle and ask ourselves, where should we focus? And what do we think is the source of what we need to learn? So much you've said, of course, but that's what I'm taking away and want to apply.
My favorite, lots and lots of favorites and things I've taken a lot of notes from what you said today. I really liked your idea of we're still writing history. And yes, there's a lot of history, particularly behind holdbacks, but in our own work and what we all do, but wake up in the morning thinking I've got a new page to write is a pretty neat idea. But I also very much like, as complicated a game as rugby is, this idea of breaking it down to a series of tasks. And in your role with the number you've got on the back of your jersey, these are the next things that you need to do in this moment, and try not to get distracted by the crowd, referee, all the noise, all the emotion, and just focus on the serious task. Again, it's a very sort of practical, pragmatic way of dealing with all the complexity that we tend to face. So, yeah, I very much liked that in what you said, but enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, and likewise, I mean, so much to take away, and maybe wrap up my takeaways in a summary of some of the things we covered. So, take it from, you know, your background in adventure tourism to sort of how you've changed over the last 20 years, how your view of there's always another Everest to climb, how, yeah, to Paul's point, you can write history. And I really like some of your visionary pieces with the greatest of all time, so the GOAT. So what will others say about us? You know, am I the greatest of all time? How do I become the greatest of all time? You know, individually, what do I need to do to become the greatest of all time? I love that. Holding people to account, as in the sort of public domain, you can't have the blind spots, you can't be a fraud, you need to be your real self. Like the PC said around, the standard that you walk past is the standard that you accept. So taking accountability to actually change things. Importance of safety, how we need to be comfortable in ourselves, how you need to drive accountability. The linkage then from sport through to business, and the jersey piece, and you know, we all play our role, we all need to be great in that role, how the environment demands skilling, and to what Garrick said around the performance triangle with mindset and structure and skills. Greg, the example you gave around the quarterfinal loss to France and that sort of 2 years of being below the line, and how then analyzing and applying that triangle into the referee and attributing an element of sort of data and profiling for that referee in order to then change the mindset and move forward. Yeah, so much rich stuff. Then we talk yet about the linkages across different sports, what we can learn, which I think is a very clear linkage through to business. So how people need to come onto the field is light, bright, and clear. So much great stuff, and then your own personal curiosity. So out of all of that, is there one thing you'd leave our listeners with as a takeaway, Darren?
I think the key thing around leadership is authenticity, you know, and in the end, you've got to be yourself. You can't be defined by others. You can't be defined by position. And I guess, you know, like in this world that I live in, you get to meet all sorts of people that have all sorts of positions in the world, but I'm actually interested in the person first, not the title. And I think that serves us well in the world. It just makes the world easier to live in when you're like that. It's taken me a while to get to that. I wouldn't say that was an easy journey, but I'm fascinated by people that are authentic and real, and that you can believe what they say. I read a great book a couple of years ago called The Four Agreements, and that talks a lot about, you know, four agreements involve one being just completely about your word, you know, never making assumptions, depersonalizing everything, you know, your behavior is your behavior, it's not mine, and ultimately just being better each day. And then so it's kind of, I guess, the principle that I'm trying to apply life now and my role as a leader.
I'd love to see what that being better each day takes forward. So your successful career so far in sport, and now applying that into sort of peak performance in the world of business as well. So excited to see where that takes you. Thanks so much for joining us, Darren. So you've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. If you think there's something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what you've learned from us. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. We always appreciate hearing from our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. So join us today using the hashtag Curious Advantage. Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide. Order your physical, digital or audiobook copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast.
The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon.
Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.